Welcome to the Fangled Cast, brought to you by Fangled Technologies, where we help you convert every person your company touches into a voracious advocate for your brand.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Fangled Cast. Today, I've got Sue Nordman with us, and she is the CEO of Obsidian, which is an industrial company that I'm going to let her tell you a little bit about. And the reason I'm having her on is this is part of the series where we're talking to CEOs about how they view in the industrial manufacturing space, how they view the role of marketing within their organization, and also how they view outside resources when they have opportunities that they think would bring an outside marketing resource in for their help. Before we go any further, and before I screw up her bio, let me introduce everyone to Sue. Tell us who you are, Sue, what you do. Tell us about Obsidian.
I'm Sue Nordman, and my company is Obsidian Manufacturing Industries, and we own several brands of machine tools and machinery, and we also provide surface grinding. Our brands were well established in their markets before we acquired them. We have Magnalock USA, which is work holding, and we have two lift magnet lines, MagnaLift and Magnetic Power Grip. And then we also have rotary surface grinders, Arter precision grinding machines, which is over 100 years old.
I promise not to make any jokes about magnetic personalities.
Sounds good.
We'll leave that for the amateurs.
We get a lot of that. We manufacture new and repair old. And like I said, we also provide surface grinding with four Matson grinders and an Arter in our shop. And that was our last acquisition in April of 2019.
I just coming from an industrial background, I find that really interesting that not only do you make the equipment, but you're also a place that uses the equipment that you make.
Yeah, everything that we manufacture, we use within our facility to manufacture those products or to provide the services that we sell. So
it's really interesting. And one of the reasons I had you on, and I joked with you before, you know, not to sound too transparent, but I'm always fascinated when I meet people in a specific industry that isn't the stereotype. And typically in these heavy, you know, industry areas, I don't come across that many female CEOs. So I'm really curious to know how you got here, and also what do you think is the advantage or disadvantage of having a woman running a hard industrial company?
Well, I'm sitting in the seat I'm in today because of my husband and my father. My dad worked in the manufacturing industry for most of his life. He worked at Matson Machine Works in Rockford and helped build the grinders. And actually, when we purchased our grinders, we discovered in the documents that we were given with the grinder that he actually did the inspection report when it shipped out of the factory, our largest 84-inch grinder. So that's kind of a neat thing. I knew when I saw that I was probably on the right track, that I was sitting where I should be. It was just kind of one of those moments that you realize, wow, how this has all come together. But my husband worked for him, started out as a machinist in the 80s. I was in accounting, but then I stayed home with our kids and raised them. And when my husband bought the first brand that he bought in 2007, I helped him. I was his support. I carried around a laptop here and there and everywhere, and worked at nights and still was available for my kids, but still helped with the business. And then when our last child left high school for college, we decided to make a change. He had enough of trying to do everything and be mm-hmm. there more than full-time. So I started full-time and beyond, of course, because once you take an interest in things, it's always more than 40 hours a week. But I took on all the administrative, the business, the handling of all that. And not soon after that, we purchased the Arter grinding machines. And I guess backing up in 2010, my husband had purchased the lift magnets. So we just kept adding. We needed to move from the facility we were in. So this building became available, and the grinding business had just went out of business. So sure. The grinders were available, and it was an easy switch, and it all blends together. So As far as being stereotyped, I do get a little bit of that. But I probably get more people that want to hear my story and hear what it's all about. I've been told I bring a different element to the table in planning meetings, and I just have a different viewpoint. And I don't know if that's because I'm a female or just my personality.
Yeah, it's always fascinating to me. I wonder, because I've been in work environments where I've had female colleagues and female bosses, and I've also had situations where, you know, where the staff that reported me was multi-gendered also. Mm-hmm. And I always wonder what the experience is like when you have to deal with somebody who doesn't really want to respect the fact that you're a CEO, if that happens, because you're female. Does that occur? Yeah.
Oh yeah, that does occur. And I'm not one to raise a fuss about it, but I will mm-hmm. stand my ground. And I think I've learned that in all aspects of my life. Let's go back, talk about getting your car serviced.
Absolutely.
You know, as a mom, and I'd have my little kids with me, and, you know, they would just try to take advantage of me. And I actually had a turning point with that. I couldn't believe it actually happened in my own home, but a repairman was there repairing my dryer. And I had my husband on my phone, and I said, you know, he says we need this new belt. And the guy said, well, you really do need it now. And he took it and he broke it right in front of my eyes. And I was just like, you're totally walking all over me. So I've learned before I ever got in the seat. Yeah. So
yeah, it's interesting. I look at people post every once in a while, you'll see someone post on like LinkedIn, they'll have a picture and it'll say female CEO of so-and-so. And then they draw a line through the female. They say, no, I'm the CEO of.
Yeah, exactly.
Or if they're a minority, Asian CEO, they cross that out. Because at the end of the day, it's the performance and the accomplishments of the person.
Right.
But, you know, we all have our sort of barriers. It's always fascinating to me to hear about sort of the struggles when somebody doesn't follow the quote, normal path
to
leadership.
Exactly.
And now that I've known you for a short time, but we've had several conversations, and there's no doubt in my mind who's the CEO of your company.
Thank you.
It's good. It's clear.
I'm glad I've established that.
immediately. If you hadn't, I wouldn't have had you on the
yeah, on the hedge little on the secret podcast. There, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go find someone real dopey and interview mm-hmm. them and make them look bad. That's the goal. No. So let's talk a little bit about marketing in the B2B space and how it's viewed in your organization. Tell me about what your internal marketing functions are and what kind of results and accomplishments you expect from that team.
Well, in the last couple years, probably, I guess time's getting away from me. We've really jumped on the digital marketing and social media. And then, you know, the pandemic hit, which just, I feel that industry has really surged. So there's a lot of, LinkedIn is a good source for sales marketing in the business world, I think. And I think it's evolving. I think it's going to be even more important in the years to come. I just watched a webinar or attended a webinar, and they had said that LinkedIn is shifting from being a job search social media to a sales and marketing.
Yeah, I was really, I think in the first year or 2 years that LinkedIn existed, it was very sales oriented at that time. And then it sort of went away. So when you first signed up for it, it was you had your network of people that you worked with and used it to say, hey, Sue, you know Jim at this company, can you introduce me? And that was really sort of how it began, was making those networking connections. And now it's morphed off into all sorts of there's people who wish it was Facebook. I think that they're tired of all the petty stuff on Facebook. So now they're coming to LinkedIn and
that's what I'm afraid of. Yeah.
And bringing it with them. But if I think with a proper strategy and really focusing on the brand, you still with LinkedIn can really make great. That's how we met.
Exactly.
Was a professional conversation that led to me wanting to have you on the show. Mm-hmm. So if we go back to the core of marketing in your organization, do you and your team sit down and really look at what is the core strategy of the company to then choose those modalities, or are you kind of doing them both at the same time?
We're doing a lot of at the same time. I kind of feel like we have so much to market, and with the different brands and the different angles and the variety of products. MagnaLock is a huge product line, you know, from vacuum to electromagnetics to repairs. It's just, there's a lot of different facets and ways we can go with that. So they all kind of go together, but yet they all have their own identity. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot to it. It's still evolving, in my opinion. Some of the brand, usually when you buy a brand that's old, someone's kind of done with it. They're passing it on. They've mm-hmm. gotten out of it what they wanted, and it their time to let it go. And so a lot of the information we were given that has passed on, we have to develop it all over again, because sure. it's just not modernized and ready to deal with the marketing world that is of today.
So. Is there a clear message that you've created internally based on the benefits of that product that separate it from all of the alternatives for the same, like other magnetic or other types of holding materials that, you know, I'm out looking for that type of an industrial application. I need to hold materials. If I looked at yours, is there something about your company that would make me go, oh yeah, that's the one I've got to do business with?
Well, I always like to hit home that we're family owned and we're personable. Mm-hmm. We're not, a lot of the brands of work holding, like I said, have been established for years. Like O.S. Walker was actually the grandfather of, you know, electromagnetics. And so they've all been around for a long time, passed through different companies, sure. different hands. But we're not like an investment company. We're not just hanging on to these and going to pass them on type mm-hmm. things. So I think we're more personable and, like I said, family oriented. That's one of the big things that we like to play up. So, that and our products go all together. We use what we sell. So, mm-hmm. You know, a lot of problems our customers encounter with their magnetics, same things going on with us, or here's what we do when we have that problem, or here's what we have done to solve that problem.
So really, if I was doing research for you and I reached out to your top customers, probably the first thing they would say back to me is, we use these guys because we feel like they're human. We know
yes,
them.
Yes, exactly.
And on top of that, if I call, they actually answer the phone.
Yes.
And then maybe the next is, well,
I will say we have voicemail, but we do yeah. answer the phone.
I meant it metaphorically, but you know, exactly. it's interesting. We've done projects in the past where a product was a true commodity, which your equipment is not. It's a unique, but in right. the packaging industry, four different companies yeah. make a plastic bucket.
Exactly.
And they're identical, except one has never been late in delivery. One can meet scheduling when other people can't. Yeah. One, if there's a problem, they don't make you work to get mm-hmm. it. So that personal touch is a huge value that separates players in that B2B industrial space.
Right.
even like the Fastenal model for parts. Mm-hmm. They put a vending machine with screws in your factory. And even right. though they're charging you more for the screws, they're responsible for making sure they're always there. So when you grab them out of the vending machine, you get charged for them.
Exactly.
And by never shutting down the plant because you're missing a screw, that's a huge value.
Exactly.
So yep. yeah, that's interesting. When do you think industrial companies like yourself recognize a need to go outside and look for outside marketing sources?
Well, I think when you feel overwhelmed. I think I would be interested in outsourcing certain things in marketing if the opportunity arose. Mm-hmm. You know, so much of things that people ask me are so dependent on when the pandemic's going to end, when things are going to turn around. I mean, sure. yeah, in the last couple of weeks, things have started to pick up in manufacturing again in the United States, but you know, you're hindered on your budgets and your, you know, just your capabilities right now because of all the problems with the pandemic, the yeah. supply chain, the availability of steel, Yes. This can go on and on.
Yeah, there's the steel situation. That's a whole other podcast. I've had that conversation a dozen times in the last couple of weeks. In particular. Then the reason I ask, like, for example, if your company were to decide, you know what, we want to consolidate and have one, say, super powered website, is that something that you would try to handle internally? Or would you hire separate companies, one to do the copywriting, the photo, or would you look to, say, an agency?
I'd probably go with an agency that serviced all of it.
Yeah.
That would be one major website, just because of Magnolox products. There's so many of them. Mm-hmm. And the Ardor grinders, there's so much history there, because the websites that we have now are not fully done. I mean, they appear done, but they have a lot more to add, and we're in the process of doing it. Like I said, the Lift Magnets never had a website.
Wow.
Until we purchased it in 2010, which by 2010, you'd think it probably would have had something, but no. So all that type of marketing, it was never established. So we have nothing to go on, which is good in a way. Mm-hmm. But if we don't have the right historical documents, we can't, some of the things, I mean, there's still probably a few models of Lift Magnets we've never made.
Wow.
That we have the engineering for and everything that we could make. No one's just ever ordered them. So.
Yeah. You know, in the B2B space, especially the industrial sector of it, has been the slowest to digitize and come up with it. I've seen recently, also in the old style chemical companies, literally the websites look like somebody made them in Word.
Yeah, exactly.
And threw in some graphics and published the Word page.
Exactly.
And you know, if you look at the evolution of B2B marketing, when I was young, B2B marketing was sell sheets and trade shows.
No one knew
what a value proposition was. You would sell based on the features of your product, not on the true benefit. Why would someone buy your equipment over somebody else? We're here in the US. If there's a problem, we can fix it. If it's overseas, you don't know who to talk to.
Exactly.
How much is downtime worth to you? We have the lowest downtime in the industry. There's all of these benefit things that are now part of that conversation, where it used to be this many volts, this much horsepower, this much torque. Our shaft is this big. You know, we use hardened steel. And at the end of the day, it was just a whole list of sales features, not what's there.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, for us, the B2B market has been so fruitful as a marketing consultancy, because so many of the people who've been embedded in that industry aren't aware that there's an option.
Right.
It's fascinating.
We've had a couple other companies, fellow, like not competitors, but other businesses in manufacturing say, you know, how do you do all that marketing? And I guess I have to have a young mindset. I have three children that are adults now, of course, but you know, the whole digital marketing for me evolved from my personal social media accounts. I'm like, why couldn't we do that type of thing? And then as far as marketing with our surface grinding, we actually, and up until when the pandemic hit, we were going door to door. We'd have a day that our salesmen would head out, they'd pick a zip code in the nearby area, and they'd be visiting people. And you can't believe the response, the positive response we got from that. There was a lot of people that were happy to see them out, put a face with our company, and be happy and very pleased to see us out. Like I said, we take candy and goodies and stickers and...
Yeah, it's funny. One of my favorite story of the door-to-door industrial, I was really busy and someone left me a note at the front desk and I wasn't able to see them. And I told them, you know, get in touch with me, make an appointment, come in and see me. So I went up to the front and they had a rubber foot, and on it said, just trying to get my foot in the door.
Oh.
And I thought, that is the corniest, dumbest thing I've ever seen.
But it's memorable.
I'll book the appointment. I got to know the person who's leaving me rubber feet.
Exactly.
And by the way, my dog loved it.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, So our marketing here internally, like I said, the grinding almost has kind of like a retail feel to it, because it's very quick, and it quick is the best way to describe it. Our grinding machines can take 2 or 3 years for someone to make the decision to buy one. They start the process. They want to talk to us, all of that. So we're at all spectrums of the marketing scheme here. Yeah. So we are, like I said, we're getting a handle on it all, blending it all together.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because that was sort of the next thing, is about the actual buying cycle for the different things that you do. Mm. I could imagine you've got equipment that the buying decision is 2 years. I imagine there's equipment that we need it now. Exactly. It's broken. We need it. We need a new one. And there's the service side.
A good example for the MagnaLock product line is like a new CNC machine. If a company's adding a new CNC machine, a lot of our customers will request MagnaLock work holding on it. So in the process of starting their search for the machine, we work with several different companies, third parties, to get the right work holding to put on their machine. Then the company that the end user buys it, and then we begin the process of manufacturing it. But that's a long cycle. But like I said, the grinding, someone can be, actually, we have people that just drop parts off. Mm-hmm. And then we have people that will call, they need it done by the end of the day, type thing.
So the work holding part, that's really interesting what you just brought up. So you've got the work holding customer who's looking to replace on their old equipment. Mm-hmm. You've got the OEM where you become part of what's specified in a machine that somebody else is building. Mm-hmm. You have them on machines that you make. Mm-hmm. Are there other markets for the work holding part of the magnetic besides that?
The repair part of the work holding is very large. We repair a lot of magnetic chucks, which a lot of our customers don't realize. We get a call every once in a while and they're like, I need a new one of these. And we're like, okay, are you getting a new machine? You know, what's going on? Well, no, it doesn't work. So I guess we have to get a new one. And we're like, no, we can actually repair it, which is a marketing plan that we're just now going to implement in April of reducing waste and recycling and repairing equipment, because a lot of our equipment can be repaired and used again. The whole, our chuck controls that's a big selling point for our chuck controls, because one of our competitors cycles out their models every 1 to 2 years. And so a customer will buy that, and then they call in a couple of years to get a replacement part. And they're like, you can't get a replacement part for that. You need to buy a new model. And
huge benefit to your
exactly partner. Exactly. So we service what we sell, and we carry spare parts, able to get things out, you know, right same day a lot of times.
That's a huge benefit that you should be shouting from the hilltops. That's how you get voracious advocates for your brand. You buy the other guys, in a few years you'll need a new one. With us, you're going to have it for life, because we can make that happen.
Another good selling point with our chuck controls is that when you open the box, you take them out and you install them. Mm-hmm. We have another competitor that doesn't sell the transformer with the chuck control. So they have to buy that independently, and then they have to put it together when they open the box, and ours are not like that. So
that's another.
Yep.
Yeah. You've really got some great benefits to be sharing with the customer base.
Yes.
That's really interesting.
We have a lot of things to say about our products. So,
yep. Do you do other, are you contemplating other types of sort of out of the box marketing, maybe even creating video training on how to use magnetic chucks to educate the population?
There's a little bit of risk management in that, because of the consumer or the machine operator that's going to not heed electrical warnings and that type of thing. So I have to be a little careful with that. Mm-hmm. I would love to do some videos, but I just have to be careful that we have all of our bases covered with those types of things, because most people that use our products are aware of all of that and use caution,
It just seems to me that in your market space, with your family's expertise and the personal touch, there's probably a play to truly doing things with your marketing that would convert the market into recognizing that if you want to talk to the thought leaders in magnetic chuck, these are the people you need to talk to. Even if you might look and shop everywhere else, if you want the experts, you know, that sort of a positioning could be really huge for you. Not that this podcast was about about it's not supposed to be a working meeting, but it just kind of turned into one. But yeah, I'm fascinated with the interesting mix, because it really, when I first looked at it, I was thinking, well, these are some interesting things. I'm not sure how they all fit together, but they really do.
And they do.
And that leads me to the question about the actual brand Obsidian. Can you talk a little bit about why this volcanic rock has become the cornerstone of?
Well, there's there is a personal story, and then there is like factuals.
Sure.
Obsidian has been used for years and years, like hundreds of years, as a tool. So mm-hmm. It started out in ancient times as a tool, spears, knives, that type of thing. And some people still do make knives and such out of that. So it relates to our industries, and it kind of gives a play on well-established tools in the industry, which are what our brands are. But then the personal story behind it all is that my kids, when they were small, were rock collectors.
Cool.
And on my dad's farm, my parents' farm, they would go for a stroll and collect rocks and everything. And the black glassy ones were always their favorite. So my kids were in 4-H growing up. And one year, one of our kids did a 4-H project for geology, which is the study of rocks. And we took it to a local museum. And maybe he was a geologist, I'm not sure. The expert there identified it as obsidian. Mm-hmm. And explained that it, he said, we have no volcanoes here. So we're in Northern Illinois. And he said, the obsidian you're finding on your farm was moved here by the glaciers. So we were like, what?
Yeah.
So then we went into that whole learning thing with our kids and told them all that. So it's just been something that has stuck with us. And when I was trying to find names for the new company, we had a small little list, 4 or 5, but Obsidian kept sticking out. So I just like the color, the black. It's just neutral. It's sturdy.
Yeah.
Well established.
Yeah. It's definitely a bedrock, you know, strong. I know I'm playing the pun game, but I think it's a brilliant base to really understand
thank you.
How all those brands fit together. That's it's fascinating. Yeah. So on that note, we're running out of time.
Okay.
So what didn't I ask you about Obsidian and the work that you do that I should have?
We talked a lot about marketing, sales. I can't really think of anything else top of my head. I wasn't expecting that question. So I'm like,
I'm that good. I asked everything. Yeah.
Check us out on our websites, our social media. We're always looking to connect with other people in our industry.
And by the way, we're going to put all of that in the comments.
Okay, good.
So I'm so appreciative of you coming on today. This was really an interesting conversation. I'm so pleased and happy that you were willing to join us.
I'm glad I could be here, and I appreciate you asking.
Thanks. And for those of you listening in your hot tub or I don't know where the heck you are, walking on your treadmill, driving your car or whatever you're doing, we really appreciate you checking out the Fangled Cast today. We'd really like you to subscribe. So if you get a chance, click down below where the little subscribe button is and subscribe to the future ones. Let us know what you think in the comments, and we will see you all again on the next Fangled Cast. Bye now.
Brought to you by Fangled Technologies, where we help you convert every person your company touches into a voracious advocate for your brand.